right, welcome inside another edition of Mic Drop here, made possible by the Believe Network and available everywhere you get your podcasts. I am your host, as always, Mike Osti. And if you're watching this, you can see him already. If you're listening to this, I will now introduce him. He's one of my favorite guests and former Steelers to talk to. And we, of course, are going to have this show focus on the offseason of the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was an important one, and one that started with a directive from the Rooney family about, hey, we need to start winning some playoff games. That is Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion, CBS Sports NFL analyst, and also all things covered, as you can see on his shirt if you're watching this as well, but host of All Things Covered podcast with his cousin. You can also see his jerseys behind him. Maybe just came out of a workout, so I appreciate you joining me here and taking the time, Brian. How have you been, by the way? It's been a while since we had you on.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for asking. I hope you're doing well, you and your family, all your friends. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, no problem, man. Yeah, I have an almost two-year-old daughter now, so we're all doing well. She's doing well. She's crazy, keeping me busy, but she's allowing me to do this right now. So, yeah. so I can appreciate that. But to jump right in here, Brian, I do want to just start off by asking you, the Steelers have had an offseason with a lot of changes, of course, a quarterback shakeup, Deontay Johnson no longer on the team. They went through the NFL draft as we're speaking. I think they had a solid draft. There's been a lot of conversation on this offseason, and as it did start with Art Rooney saying, hey, I'm sick of getting in the playoffs and having no chance. We got to start winning the playoff game. Fans and media, we've all been talking about it for years. He finally came out and said, this is a directive. We got to start winning more in the postseason. It has been a while. Your overall thoughts on the offseason so far, what you thought you needed to see occur, what has occurred? Do you think this team is better right now?
No question. I think most importantly, number one, the offseason was beneficial. I think it was positive. The reason why I say that, because I believe where the roster is right now is better compared to what we had a year ago, especially at the most important position, Mike, which is the quarterback position. Right. Russell Wilson is a better quarterback than our option from a year ago. And people have been overly critical on Russell Wilson last year and the last two seasons in Denver. But if you go back and look at his numbers, if you combine his last two seasons in Denver or just talk about his year, his one season a year ago, he played pretty good football. I mean, he played real good football. If we had those numbers that Russell gave the Broncos last year, who knows what we could have done? Yes, we were in the playoffs, but you talk about being relevant in the playoffs. You know, who knows? So I love the fact that we improved the most important position, the quarterbacks, with Russell and Justin Fields. I love the fact that we have addressed throughout the draft the trenches, the offensive line. You know, two gritty, nasty guys that are fundamentally sound as well when you look at what we did in our first two rounds of the draft. And so in totality, I really like what we've done. Now, just the schedule just released. So now you know where when you're playing the teams you're scheduled to play. It's safe to say the odd makers, the schedule makers didn't do us any favors. But I still like our chances, man. I think this is a very, very pivotal year. This is a year, as you mentioned, you know, from Mr. Rooney, that it's not just about getting the playoffs. We got to find a way to make some noise.
To say the least, yeah, Brian McFadden again joining me here on Mic Drop, available on Believe Network and everywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, TuneIn, Google Play, etc. Here. You did mention Russell Wilson kind of maybe being better than some people give him credit for, and obviously that was a mess of a situation. Didn't feel like Sean Payton ever wanted him there. He ended up getting benched while they kind of were winning and he was playing well. There were rumors that the coach was asking him to change his contract to get on the field. It was just a mess. And a better situation for him, even at least personally, now with the Steelers, also a low-risk move. They're not having to pay that much of his salary. You bring in Justin Fields, you give up a sixth-round pick instead of the first or second that were in rumors before. It does look like a better situation and a low-risk situation, but I do want to ask you, off of that quarterback situation that currently exists, many are saying, in the media even, they're throwing out the hot take that, yeah, you have a veteran, former Super Bowl champion like yourself and Russell Wilson, even though it was a while ago, maybe there's something left in the tank. He got to prove himself. Justin Fields, former first-round pick, he also had a good kind of end of last season too. But Justin Fields is younger. He's the younger of the two. Maybe he's more athletic now. He's going to end up with this job. You mentioned that you believe Russell Wilson still has something left in the tank and kind of can prove the doubters wrong from a year ago. Do you buy into any of that, knowing Mike Tomlin as well as you do, having played under him? Do you think this job is Russell Wilson's to lose and he's going to be the starter week one already unless he really sucks in camp? How do you view that quarterback battle? Because there are some of us that even though Russ is the vet, they think this is going to be Justin Fields' job at some point, if not even in week one.
I'll say this. I think it's Russell's job to lose. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, they signed Russell, granted, as you stated, a very, very team-friendly deal because the Broncos are paying the majority of his 2024 salary. But they signed Russell under the assumption that he's going to be the starting quarterback because he was deserving of being a starting quarterback. Like I said, Russell was overly critical, but go look at his numbers for our viewers that are tuning in. Go back and look at Russell's numbers. Being a part of a team that was pretty much dead in the water. They didn't have a lot. They didn't have a lot surrounding him.
Yeah.
And as you stated, at one point in time, they were in the playoff conversation and they decided to bench him, not because of lack of production, but because of a contractual issue.
Yeah.
So that's why I think this is Russell's job to lose, because if you were to compare Russell Wilson's 2023 season to Justin Fields' 2023 season, Russell was the better quarterback. Now, there was a lot that was happening around Justin in Chicago that probably hampered his consistency. And the same can be said for Russell in Denver. That wasn't the best ideal working situation as well.
Yeah.
But Russell was the better quarterback. Now, with me saying that, Russell will be the starting quarterback as long as he's balling. You know, so for us as fans, I have to ask the fan base this. For some fans that are rooting for Justin Fields to become the starting quarterback.
Yeah, because that exists.
the only way that would happen, if Russell is the week one starter, the only way we see Justin Fields is if we're losing ball games.
100%.
So now as fans, if you really want to see Justin Fields play, that means we have to be losing ball games.
So you don't think there's any chance of Justin Fields week one? Because I don't either, but some that are throwing it out there.
No. Russell Wilson is a vet. He's been in the league for such a long time. How many vets lose their jobs during training camp?
Yeah.
It's only three preseason ball games, right? So most vets may play at one preseason ball game. Not saying that it can't happen.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that.
You got to figure out if it's going to look good in shorts. A vet's the defense is not trying to kill the vet in training camp. It's not going to be the same. If he's really struggling in camp, that's a whole nother meeting on where his career can go.
Yeah.
This probably would be the end of the line for his overall career if he doesn't end up as the week one starter. But you would figure this is the only situation where maybe it could happen, and I don't think it will, just because, as you mentioned, contractually, if the Steelers would give the job to Fields in week one or even early in the season, they really wouldn't be losing much as you normally would with a vet. It'd be $1 million they'd be giving up, and the Broncos are paying all the money they could laugh about later. So this is the only situation where maybe it could allow that, but I don't think that's going to happen. For all these meetings that Wilson and Tomlin had, I cannot imagine that there wasn't some, okay, you do your thing, you ball, it's your job, at least for one season. Yep. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't have came over. He would have had other options as well.
I agree.
It was a move. But Brian McFadden here joining me on Mic Drop. And you mentioned the weapons they maybe they didn't have with their previous teams. I do want to get to the receiver situation now, because Deontay Johnson was moved, and that was contractual thing too. They didn't really want to give him a second deal. George Pickens is a big time talent. Is he a wide receiver one is a whole question that we're going to probably find out, but maybe we won't if they bring somebody in. Do you believe they need to bring in a veteran receiver to pair with George Pickens? Is that something you maybe don't think will happen? Because contractually down the road, that could get them in a mess where they got to pay two receivers. I don't know if that's going to happen either. But what are your thoughts on the receiver situation? Is it enough now? Do they need to do more for it to allow these quarterbacks, whoever it is, to have success?
I think we need to add a veteran presence, a guy who's established in the National Football League, a guy who still has gas left in the tank to really, you know, improve our offense, Mike. Because you look at our schedule, just in the division alone, it's a very, very daunting task. And we're playing against pretty good defenses. Pretty good defenses. So right now, I'll say this. We lost Deontay. Right? And Deontay, for all the criticism he faced at times while in Pittsburgh, Deontay can ball. He can ball. He can play. He can play. So we lost our wide receiver one from a year ago and replaced him with who? Now, I understand we brought in Van Jefferson, but Van didn't do a lot last year. Hey, he played with two organizations, the Rams and the Falcons.
Yeah, it's hard to say the room's better right now.
No question. So that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going, Mike. I know you brought in Watkins as well from Philly, a speed burner, but really hasn't solidified himself as a reliable pass catcher, given the opportunities or the lack thereof, but we don't know.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is our wide receiver room, just not having Deontay in the room right now, makes this room lesser than what we had last year.
100%. And I
in
guess,
my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think everybody really does. The rumors of Ayuk before the draft, I never bought into those. Michael Thomas has even been in rumors right now. I think the issue is, what would you be willing to give up to bring in that vet? Do you think you're right now ready that if you bring in this vet receiver, that even makes Pickens better, that makes the overall group better, you can make a championship run? If not, do you do it? Omar Khan and company are going to be there for years to come. They don't change up the brass, obviously. That's a whole conversation there, and it'll be interesting what the price tag would be financially, or if it's a trade, or how you get somebody else there. But the other part of this is, Freiermuth, to me, can be one of the better tight ends in all of football. He's been good, but he can be even better. But Russell Wilson, if we're both saying he's the week one starter, and is until they start losing, he's never really used the tight end that well, at least not for a while.
Yeah,
that's not where he looks. Now, Tomlin and the crew and Arthur Smith may tell him to look there, and Arthur Smith's offense is different than what he had before, but that's also a risk if you're basically saying that Pickens will be the one and Freiermuth will be the wide receiver too, even though he's a tight end.
We need more. We need more. We need more from the side of knowing. We have a lot of wide receivers on our team right now where there's question marks. Sure. Like, we know George Pickens could be a guy, even with the lack of opportunities last year. George Pickens emerged when he got the opportunity. So we're not concerned about George Pickens. I think the concern is with the other wide receivers.
Right.
And when the unknown can be scary in football, because you're hoping, but you don't know. And there's no such thing as a for sure thing, but you will feel more comfortable knowing that, okay, we've seen this guy do it before. And I'll go another step further with this. This might be the first time that I can remember in a long, long time, Mike, and you followed the Steelers a long time as well, that if we were to rank the wide receivers in our division, you might have Pittsburgh last in totality when you look at wide receivers.
Yeah, in terms of the depth, 100%. You could argue talent with George Pickens, even though he's early in his career. Again, you could argue Freiermuth is a tight end, even though he's a tight end.
I'm just saying wide receivers.
Just wide receivers. And depth. And even if Pickens becomes a wide receiver one and is a Pro Bowler, that's one guy. As we've seen over the years, and this even happened to Juju after AB was no longer there, one guy with single coverage, great. One guy with double coverage, totally different story. So that could happen as well to Pickens, even if he emerges. Yeah, the overall room is a major question mark.
And this is the first time that I could think of when we go into camp with this. Usually the wide receiver positions have always been a strong suit for our team. We've done a great job, you know. Yeah. And I understand we brought in Roman Wilson from Michigan, but he hasn't played. He hasn't played. So we have to see how it plays out. But, this is a very, very unfamiliar spot for us as fans when it comes to talking about our wide receiver room. in totality 100%. Compared to years past.
100% going all the way back. I mean, decades here. Usually there's a pair. Usually there's a pair of receivers. If you do only have one, usually that's a premier pro.
We've always had two.
Established. Usually two. 100%.
Go back to my rookie year, 05. You had Hines and Randall. You know what I mean? And then eventually you had Hines and Santonio. Hines and Nate Washington, Santonio.
And Plexico was there before you.
Plexico was before me. You know what I mean? Then you had the Mike Wallace, Emmanuel Sanders, Hines Ward era. You know, Antonio Brown. And then the Juju, Antonio Brown. Juju, Antonio Brown, Martavius Bryant, Marcus Wheaton.
Yeah, he's going through it. Yeah, 100%. 100%. And then obviously Pickens and Deontay last year.
Yes. Like, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, 100%. This is the most concerning offseason in terms of the wide receiver position. I'm not surprised about the Deontay situation, but it does leave the Steelers, a little bit more bare, a little bit more vulnerable. And maybe that's why there's so much smoke about them looking at a vet receiver. It would have been harder in the draft. Maybe it'll get easier as the offseason goes. I do want to go into now, again, Brian McFadden joining me here on Mic Drop with Believe and available everywhere you get your podcasts here, Mike Osti on Mic Drop. About another position that potentially concerning, and this is a position that you'd be very, very familiar with, and they did address this a little bit after the draft, but there's still a concern here, and that is slot corner. A lot of conversation with the Steelers are going to do slot corner-wise. Beanie Bishop, I actually covered him directly, covering the Mountaineers professionally out of WVU. He was an All-American last year at West Virginia after coming to West Virginia out of the portal, but he didn't get drafted. There's some concern that he's undersized for this. And if he doesn't get it done and step up, then who else would be the guy? Where do you think the Steelers are going to go at slot corner? Where should they go at slot corner? And where's your concern level for slot corner?
I don't know where they're going to go, Mike. You know, it's almost like we've been trying to figure out this slot situation since we lost Mike Hilton.
It's been a while.
Yeah, and then Cam Sutton came into the fold, you know what I mean? Eventually he serves to be a reliable guy, but then we lost him. Yeah. And then you look at last year, you know, we had quite a few.
Maybe even bringing him back because of the kind of drama that he's in.
Yeah, you got to let that play out off the field first and foremost. Right. And last year there were quite a few guys that were playing the slot, you know what I mean? So to answer your question, I don't know. And another thing that I don't know, I'm concerned with is the lack of depth at cornerback.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we got Jackson from Carolina. Of course, we got JP Jr. and, you know, Kobe Trice. You know, hopefully he can stay healthy, but he hasn't been healthy in quite some time, going back to his college days as well. So what happens if we, you know, sustain some injuries at the cornerback spot? You know, so that's an area of concern. The slot, definitely, because we have our two guys penciled. Maybe they feel like Deontay could be a guy you can move into the slot. That might be a more reliable option than keeping him out wide and bringing in someone to play the slot. Maybe. You know what I mean?
Is that easier said than done?
For some players, yes, because it's unfamiliar territory. Right. You know, when you play the slot, you cover more ground because you have more field on either side of you. You're inside the field, basically. If you're playing the right corner, you know, you have the sideline at your disposal. You know, you're basically covering half of the field. When you play slot, you have more ground to cover, not to mention option routes that might come your way from wide receivers. And you got to be a reliable tackler in run support as well. So some players could do it, some players can't. That's why you don't see a lot of Trent McDuffie type players that can play real good football outside in the edges at the perimeter and then move in and just still be a beast inside as well. That's why when you get a guy like that, like Marlon Humphrey from Baltimore, those guys are special because you don't see it happen a lot. So we have to see, but maybe Dante Jackson could be the guy they're thinking about moving inside to the slot as we see it now. Because when you look at the options, we're very, very limited when it comes to that.
Yeah, and the options, and some are bringing him up, and I earlier did, and again, it's a player I covered directly in Beanie Bishop. Yeah. What – I don't know how much you know about Beanie because he's obviously going to be a rookie in the NFL, but what would it take for Mike Tomlin, as you know him, or even for a player coming right out of college, an undrafted guy, to be that guy for Tomlin on a team that believes they can win? Is that something that you could see happen that obviously would then really hurt? The depth is going to be a problem regardless. What would a player like Beanie have to do to maybe win that job when he's not even coming, who was a drafted player? He was a ball hawk in college, I'll tell you. I don't know if he can be a dominant tackler and have that be his main thing. As much as he had four picks, Neil Brown told us he should have had 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
He was great, but he also was great 1 year of college. Prior to that at Minnesota, not so great in the Big Ten. And then before that was a Group of Five player. That would be a lot to throw on a rookie who wasn't drafted with that resume out of college and say, you're the guy. It's one season of an All-American, not as much prior in terms of competition level.
Yeah. One thing I like about Beanie is that he improved. You talked about the multiple stops.
Yeah.
He improved. He developed. And because of that, he has an opportunity with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, to answer your question, what could he do? You have to provide an element of trust for the staff as a young guy. Because if they don't trust that you know what you're supposed to do, you're not going to be out there to try to do it.
Sure.
So with that being said, he has to learn the playbook. Because when you get out there as a rookie, I remember my first rookie camps, OTAs, they wanted to know if I knew what to do. Because you can be super gifted athletically, but Mike, if you don't know what to do, they're not going to trust putting you out there. So they want to know how much do you know? How fast can you learn? Because also too, one thing helps the other. If you know what to do, you feel more comfortable when you're out there because you're not second guessing yourself. You're not saying, hey, this man moving motion, do I follow him? What leverage will I use if I do follow him? Am I outside? Am I inside? Who do I talk to? Who am I replacing? Who do I got to let know I'm leaving? These are things that happen in the flow of a play, and you can't be out there second guessing yourself, because when you do, that provides a sense of hesitation. And yeah, now you're step behind.
How much time do you have to make that decision?
Yeah, so these are things that's what people are like, when you're out there and you're playing nickel, there's a lot you have to understand. You're to the strong side, Mike. Okay, I'm on number two. Okay, now, even though I'm in coverage, you have to understand what you do in run support. Am I contained, or do I fit inside my C-gap player? Where am I fitting? Okay, I'm moving motion. I'm moving. Now I got to go over with him. Now it changed my entire mindset of what I have to do, because now I'm on the weak side. So to answer your question, learn the playbook, Beanie. Learn it, man. Because when you learn it, now you're able to showcase your skill set, because now you know what to do. You know what I'm saying? You know how to handle your business. And now they're starting to see, okay, this young fella done picked up this system. And guess what they start to do then? Let's put a little more on this plate. Let's see, can he handle it? You know what I mean? So if you don't know what to do, you're not going to be out there, number one. But to get those opportunities to be on the grass, they have to trust you.
Yeah, 100%. And I also will say about Beanie, and this is something that I'm sure Mike Tomlin and the coaching staff will love, he's very, very hungry. He's very hungry, and he carries a giant chip on his shoulder that is still with him. Not being drafted, I'm sure, adds to that, but he carried that to West Virginia. He felt like he was misused in the Big Ten with Minnesota. He felt like he should have been more than a Group of Five player before that. He always feels like he is not getting his fair shake all the time, and that's not criticism. That probably is how he eventually became an All-American. That's probably why Mike Tomlin loved him so much. But you also have to think, and this just goes off of needs maybe, the Steelers have been saying for a while they love Beanie Bishop so much, they did not draft him, though. They ended up signing him as an undrafted free agent. So was there something that they didn't see to draft and they waited, or is that just part of the needs?
Man, it's something about Pittsburgh. They have the luck that they most organizations, the player who they love always fall into the lap. Think about with Joey Porter Jr. last year. They loved him. Didn't take him in the first round. He fell in their lap in the second round.
And then Zach Frazier this year, I actually said to somebody on a show right before the draft, Frazier's stock was rising. I was saying they can't sit at 51 and get Frazier. He's going to be gone. They're going to have to get aggressive. I wrote about this on national outlets, and then I had to say, oh, I guess I was wrong. They got lucky again.
It always happens.
We keep it, honestly, from now on, and I tell this to fans too, every year in the offseason, We throw out mock drafts. People throw out, well, they're in love with this guy, but this has to happen. All these different projections. From now on, if you want to predict what the Steelers are going to do, the very first guy that somebody says they're in love with 6 months before the draft, that's who they'll end up with. Yep. Almost guarantee it. It always happens. If you somebody says someone, they end up there. And Zach Frazier feels like a bust-proof guy as well. He's perfect to either be with a vet trying to reboot things or a rookie or a younger quarterback, or if they would draft a rookie in the future after this current situation. Or I do think he'll eventually be that starter and be there for a while. Brian McFadden here joining me on Mic Drop on Believe and available everywhere you get your podcasts here. Mike Osti. I do want to ask you a couple more things here before I let you go. Number one, you've been bringing this up. This is the conversation now. Your former teammate Ryan Clark dropped some bombs on this on a national network. The schedule. You don't know how good teams are going to be. I'm sure going into some seasons you thought this was a brutal game, and then that team ended up not being good. Or a team you thought maybe would not be great ended up being better. It happens every year in the NFL. That's why it maybe is the most popular league in the world and is so widely loved. Every fan base really can argue they have a chance before that season starts, even if some more than others. But with all of that said, you have 4 out of 5 games against divisional opponents towards the end of the year. In fact, you have those 4 and then the middle ones, the end 4 out of 6, really. You got the Eagles and Chiefs. Obviously, that's 2 tough games. You have Christmas Day now, which I don't know if the players love playing that, even though it'll be in the limelight and Taylor Swift will probably be there. It's not an easy schedule. Many are calling it the hardest schedule in the NFL, and this is a team that was just in the playoffs, even though they did not win a playoff game. I want to ask you as a former player, number one, do you guys look at these things? Do you look at the schedule when it comes out, when we're all putting it out there as member of the media and release day? Do you sit there and say, we feel like we got screwed. We're excited about this game. We're thrilled about Christmas Day, or my family's going to be mad. I don't want to play it. How do you view the schedule this many months before a season starts? And then how do you feel about this Steelers schedule? Did they kind of get the raw deal? Do we not know those answers yet because the season hasn't started? Or no matter what these records will be, you know those divisional games are always going to be tough. So at the end of the day, you know this is going to be hard, even if those teams disappoint or some are better than we expect.
Well, going back to my playing days, you know, we always wanted to know when was the bye,
okay,
right? How many primetime games did we have? Because for us, that was a statement game. We're playing in front of the biggest stage. There's no other game on. So that's opportunity to really send a message to the entire football world. And we just love having the bright lights. You know, that's the type of group that we had. You know, we love the bright lights. And lastly, when do we get into the divisional games? Because, you know, as you stated, you know, if you don't take care of your business in the division, you won't have a chance to get into the playoffs. Right. So now, as we talk about now, the here and now, as a fan of the game still and as an analyst of the game, every year there's going to be teams that have, quote unquote, a harder schedule than others every year. That's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes. But it's your job to still eat the crumbles. You still got to eat them. Right. That's your job.
That's Tomlinism. That sounds like a Tomlin comment.
No question. I don't know if he's heard that one before, but I just thought about that one. But Mike T, you can use it if you want to.
We'll get it to him.
This is how the cookie crumbles, but it's your job to eat it still. I'll go back to 2008 season. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was living in South Florida at the time. It was during the offseason, and the schedule came out, and all the media, you know, folks, analysts, and if you go back, Mike, remember that schedule? We had the hardest schedule in the National Football League based on the teams from a year ago and how they finished, along with the quarterback star power that we were facing. Yeah. Everyone's saying, oh, my goodness, Pittsburgh. And if you remember in 07, Cleveland finished real good. They were like 10-6 with Derek Anderson and crew. Yeah. So everyone felt like Cleveland was going to be a great team in 2008.
Yeah, that
so
was
everyone came out to the schedule.
Right.
Yeah, everyone came out and said, oh, my goodness, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Best case scenario, they might finish third in the division. Best case.
Yeah.
Go back and look at what people were saying about our schedule. And I remember I got on the phone with a few of my teammates. It was like, okay, y'all hear what everyone's saying about us. Instantly, we got in a mindset to really show everyone, no, y'all got us effed up. Yeah. Like, no. It's the hardest schedule. We're going to run through it. And that was the first piece of motivation back in May or late April, May or whatever it was when it came out, when we all got motivated. It was like, it's time to go. Because if you remember in 07, we had a first round loss to Jacksonville. Right. And as I stated, the other teams in our division, Cincinnati was rolling, Baltimore was rolling, and Cleveland showed a pulse. So now we got in. Let's go. It's time to go. And if you go back, we ran through that schedule, finished number two in the AFC because we lost Christmas to Tennessee, won a Super Bowl. Now I fast forward to this schedule. On paper, it looks brutal. On paper, it does look brutal. You look at how we start the season, look at some of the games in the first half of the season, and then when you transition to the second half of the season, I think it is from week 11 to week 17 or 18, it's a gauntlet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even the out-of-conference games are real rough.
Right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All AFC North opponents, and then they sprinkled in Philly and Kansas City.
Right.
Just to sprinkle that in there. But one thing I'll say to you, Mike, and I'll say this to our viewers that are tuning in, that love the Steelers like we all love the Steelers. One reason you should be optimistic about that second half of the season, that schedule, and all the opponents that we have within our division. I have a nugget for you guys. If you didn't know this, this is a nugget that I found out, and I'm super excited because I knew we were pretty relevant, but I didn't know it was to this degree. The last 5 years, the Pittsburgh Steelers against AFC North opponents, it didn't matter who we had at quarterback, who was injured, who was healthy, it didn't matter. It didn't matter who they had. The last 5 years, Pittsburgh, they're 19-11 against AFC teams, AFC North teams.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
The last 5 years, and in those 5 years, the Lamar Jackson of the world was circulating in the AFC North. Joe Burrow. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, now you have Deshaun Watson.
And that's the end of Ben into Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodges. Obviously, that was a rough season. They just missed the playoffs. You go into Kenny Pickett and Trubisky. Yes. I mean, it's not – yeah, it's Hall of Famers or budding Pro Bowlers versus –
I mean, just the last 3 years alone, we've been trying to figure out this quarterback situation. Just the last 3 years alone.
Yeah.
And we're still eight games above 500.
In the division.
In our division. So that's one reason to be excited because we do real good work. Think about this. Last year, we swept Baltimore. The second game, they rest everyone. But the first game, they played everyone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And they're in the AFC title game. Yeah.
We split Cleveland. The game we lost, Dorial Thompson-Robinson beat us.
Yeah.
We beat Cleveland when they had everyone. Of course, Chubb got hurt during the ball game.
That was a key. But yeah, you're right. 100%.
So we've always stayed afloat within our division. And another cool nugget, Joe Burrow is 7-13 against AFC North opponents.
Yeah. And obviously he was hurt last year, but yeah, even before that, even that Super Bowl appearance,
So it's something about our divisional business.
Yeah.
Well, we've always stayed afloat and we found ways to win. So that's one reason that I'm optimistic because recent history, you know, when you talk about sports, either when you talk gambling or you talk what you expect to see, you always got to go back to what you've seen.
It's only natural, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's only natural.
Every season is different, and some could argue different roster, different players, of course. That's true. But it's same head coach. A lot of things are still the same in terms of scheme. Some players are still there. Yeah,
better you quarterback go back room.
To what you know, it's only natural. The quarterback room will be different this year, of course, which was a goal, and it did happen. They were able to shake things up. But again, as we talked about the open of the show, you have to feel like they're in a better spot at quarterback, no matter who it is. Even if somehow Wilson would have a horrible camp and Fields would beat him out, Fields was better than Pickett last year still. So you feel like the room is better than it was, and last year's team did get into the playoffs. This year's team should at least get there, and that's what Mr. Rooney certainly put down, that he wants to at least get there. But I'm sure some Steelers fans also will come back and say part of the issue maybe why there hasn't been a playoff win in so long, even if you beat up on the division, you do get in or you do overachieve in that regard with injuries or whatever, there are so many other losses that it makes your seed worse than it should be, and that's why you're on the road in Buffalo in a snowstorm. For them to win playoff games, they need to maybe take care of business as much as possible to avoid that, get some at home, Granted, nothing is guaranteed there when you do that either. But the schedule's rough. It's hard to argue that because, as you said, no matter – yeah, there's going to be teams that disappoint that are supposed to be good. Bengals last year. There's going to be key injuries that nobody would predict. Aaron Rodgers week one last year with the Jets. There's also going to be teams that nobody thinks are going to be good that are going to be good, and it'll be a rough game, like, say, Detroit last year. But those divisional games are there. They're stacked together. They're going to be tough no matter what happens with those teams. Even the Bengals last year without Burrow, even the Browns and the mess they had, they eventually were able to turn around with Flacco coming in that nobody would have predicted. Those were still tough games, even with injuries and them being depleted. They just always are, Mike Tomlin. At the end of all those games, we'll say, you know, AFC North football. He expected it to be close no matter what. And then I think everyone can guarantee the Chiefs are certainly going to be rough to play no matter what, looking for another ring and continue their dynasty. Do you like playing Christmas Day, though, if you were a player? What are your thoughts on playing Christmas Day? You mentioned limelight, wanting the bright lights. You're going to get that. But any part of you, this is also a job. You're a family man, too. Many of these players, certainly vets like Cam Hayward, who I do want to ask you about.
I mean, I wouldn't have an issue playing Christmas Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the NFL hasn't messed with it before. The NBA has always been there. But there are some that kind of want that day left alone, even for fans.
No. Christmas is a great time to watch football and eat. Think about the Christmas schedule that we saw last year. You know, it was great. I think it's another opportunity for you to be on a stage where you can open eyes as an individual or as a team.
Sure.
You know, and for you to be picked to be on Christmas Day, that tells you the value of the organization.
It's for a reason, 100%. Yeah.
No question.
Chiefs, Steelers, no question. Taylor Swift, Kelsey,
come on, man.
Mike Tomlin.
In Pittsburgh? What are we talking about?
Steeler fans. They absolutely picked that for a reason. They know.
Think about this. How many fans who, would players want to play it on Christmas to be with their family? No question you would, but I would rather play ball. And for our fans, if you had opportunity of being at home with your family for Christmas, or someone gave you two free tickets to go to Pittsburgh to watch Pittsburgh play against Kansas City, how many fans would say, you know what, I'll pass on the tickets. I want to stay home and open presents under the tree.
Yeah.
What would you do, Mike? Are you going to the game, or would you, if you had that option? Someone said, we're going to fly you out to Pittsburgh, give you two free tickets, or you can stay at home with your family on Christmas. Which one you take it?
Yeah, I would definitely go. I might be there covering it, but either way, I definitely would go. And I'll put you this way, too. Anyone in your family, to any of the fans out there, and what Brian's asking, anyone out there who would have a family member that would be mad at them for not going to Christmas dinner and going to the game, that family member is secretly jealous they didn't get the tickets. Like, they would want to go too.
Or they might be a Browns fan or a Bengals fan.
Maybe they're a fan of another team or something like that too. Yeah, I mean, that is the NFL is the most popular league in the world. They're going to be on every single day. Nobody's ever had a problem with the NBA being there. I get the family aspect, but if they know they can get ratings, they're going to do it. I do want to just last thing on the schedule, though, because this is also brought up every year, too, and obviously there's a lot more games overseas now. The Jaguars, basically, it feels like it's their quasi-home in addition to Jacksonville. The Steelers haven't had to do it all that much. They've kind of been able to avoid it, just like the Rooney family. I know they don't want to do Hard Knocks. They've been able to avoid that, despite it would be very, very entertaining some of those past years to be on Hard Knocks. What would your thoughts be about going overseas? How much does that impact a team and a season, for example?
I wouldn't twice in a year. I would hate it. I would hate it because you're taking away. If you had a home game, it becomes a neutral game.
Yeah.
Right. And you also think about the tax over there. I think it's 45%. Depends on 100 pounds or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Because people don't understand, you know, for us as players, we get taxed in every state we play in. You know what I mean? So
that's a great point. That's almost never
brought up. So if you're Jacksonville, you play in a state, a tax free state,
right,
when you have home games.
Right.
So if you're playing across the water twice, regardless, one of those games probably could have been in Jacksonville where you didn't have taxes, state taxes coming out of your check. Now you go across there. I think it's 45%.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So.
And imagine if you play in, like, say, California, where it's like 12.5% that come, they crush you. And then you also go overseas. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's a player perspective.
I think it's like 100,000 pounds. It's 100 pounds or something like that. But long story short, is you're being taxed more there.
That's rough.
You know, more there for those games. So that's something that I don't want no parts of.
Yeah, it's hard to get excited. I mean, you might argue the limelight, but who's really, not many fans are going to be watching. You got to get up at 10 a.m. Some of those time differences, you're probably losing eyeballs on you, at least from America. And then, yeah, when you look at the tax, you look at also the tax on your body. You look at a long season flying back and forth. It doesn't benefit the team, but I get why the league is doing it. As long as they don't put a team there, which is something that I would really be against, but there's always rumors there. That would just kill that team, and I can't imagine anyone wanting to play there. Brian McFadden here joining me on Mic Drop. What I do want to ask you about then is something that also has been recently in the news, and it's different than any other offseason, even though now he's a veteran, and he's been a veteran, and who knows how much longer he's going to play, and that is Cam Hayward. Right now, he's been open that he is going to be skipping more workouts coming, what's happening next week with the team, and who knows when he'll be there in the offseason. He's doing his podcast, but he did admit it's part of a contract situation. He's never skipped any of these camps before. After rookie minicamp, he's always been there to either mentor, be the leader, and be part of all that. He is not right now as we speak. How much of an important factor is that at all as a veteran player like him? Does he need to be there? Does he not need to be there? Will that hurt the team at all? Do you think he's even a player that they need to prioritize to sign long-term, which is what he's looking for at his age, at the end of that deal, 38, 39 years old? How productive will he be then? What are your thoughts on the Cam Hayward situation? Because that's kind of under the radar, but he's been open that this is a contract thing. He re-signed a few years ago when he could have had something like this before, and now some fans are bringing up, you got to pay for what's happening in the future rather than the past. Is this smart to acquiesce to him again?
Cam not being there during OTAs is not an issue.
Okay.
I played with Cam Hayward. That's how old Cam is.
Cam Hayward's been there a long time.
When it comes to being a part of the organization.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Cam is his grandfather into the organization, ultimate professional. If Cam is not there doing OTAs, volunteer workouts, like, that's not an issue. Yeah. Right. This is something you monitor when you training camp starts.
Okay.
Now, in regards to what should the team do, I'm glad I don't have this decision. Mm-hmm. I don't have to make this decision because Cam is 35. He dealt with some injuries a year ago. I think he had offseason surgery. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up to knowing where he is body wise. So for Cam, you're 35. How long do you want to play?
Yeah.
And not only about how long do you want to play, how many years of good high-level ball do you think you have left? Can you give us?
Yeah, that's the difference, too, not just playing.
Yeah, it's not just playing. It's about being the anchor. And no, we're not saying that we expect for you to be 25-year-old Cam Hayward. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that. But we still expect for you to be a leader on our front and not just leading vocally, but leading through your production.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a conundrum that Omar has to deal with to some degree.
He's a player. He got to be able to play, right?
Yeah. Because, you know, it'd be one thing. I think Cam would have a lot more leverage if he was healthy last year. Because when he's healthy, he's going to give you numbers. He's going to be productive. But he was, I think, how many games did he miss last year?
Yeah, he missed a good amount. Yeah.
And then, 7 or 8. I don't know. I can't remember. But I know he missed a handful of ball games, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So, I mean, this is something to monitor, as you mentioned. Right now, it's not a big deal, Mike. But once training camp starts, if he's not there, then it's something to monitor for sure.
Is it anything that jumps out more to you, though? Because he was even honest with this on his podcast. Obviously, as a veteran player like that, it's not like it's going to impact his game or maybe even anybody else's game. There's enough leaders there and coaches there. But the fact that he is willing to skip these practices and camps and workouts now, even though as we're speaking, we're only in May, this is certainly well before training camp and he's never skipped these before. Does that show you as a player, okay, this guy's laughing and joking, but he's serious. Like he wants a deal, or he maybe would actually hold out a little bit in camp when that was never really a concern before with him.
Yeah, because it never was a concern because he's always got the deals done before getting ready for your final year.
Yeah.
So that's the thing with Cam. You know, if you look at his entire career in Pittsburgh, going through his rookie deal, you know, they pretty much solidified his contractual options before that final year of his rookie deal. the fifth-year option, whatever the case was. Mm-hmm. So he's never been in this situation where, hey, we haven't really been talking. And it sounds like they haven't been talking. It's not like we're hoping, like, no, nah, man, we haven't had any discussions about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So he played 11 games last year. I just looked at it.
Yeah. So he missed seven. He missed seven. Yeah. So, it's not a big deal. Like, right now, Mike, no, man, it's May. I mean, Cam is.
It is May. Yeah, right.
He can call defense as far as defense. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Heck, even if he had a contract for another 3 or 4 years, he probably wouldn't be there every day right now anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is a period where a lot of vets like him, they start skipping things even if they're in the middle of a contract, and the coaching staff might not even care. They want his body right. They want him mentally. Yeah.
As long as working out, you're in shape, you don't need, we know who you are. These guys in the locker room know who you are. We know you're going to lead. We're not concerned about that.
It's the same thing even, and I've covered training camp for years. The start of training camp, you get to Cam Hayward, TJ Watt. They're able to kind of slower drip into doing things because the coaching staff knows they don't need to be banging as much as everybody else. And they certainly want him healthy. And they already know the playbook. You mentioned Beanie learned the playbook. These guys know the playbook. So like the back of their hand. So that is something that's very true. It's not going to affect his game. Health is the issue here, but you have to wonder. Last year was the first year in a while here where he really stacked missing games. Did play 17 each of the prior 2 years. Father Time's undefeated, though. He's undefeated against you, undefeated against everybody. He's going to be undefeated against Cam Hayward. You have to wonder if the injuries is also why we're here, where the Steelers in their minds are saying, too, as you mentioned, you're coming off an injury. We love what you did. Steeler, great. Borderline Hall of Fame guy that could get to Canton someday. If you look at the overall resume, got the Walter Payton Man of the Year award that he's always been wanting. But again, 35, we're paying you 36, 37, 38, 39 if we get real nice. That's a hard position to say you're going to be a Pro Bowl guy at those ages. And then what is the deal? Does it dip? Do they try to work out something where they pay him a lot next year, but then it's a lot less at 38? Do they maybe take guaranteed money away? Does he want to do that, though? Because maybe he's going to say, I don't think so. I'm a borderline Hall of Fame guy. I want the money. He's a great team guy. There's no drama with Cam. He's a leader, and they definitely need him. But, yeah, that's a big question mark because you can only – generally speaking, you can only be in one place for so long. This is a new era of football. He's seen so many of them, and you got to pay for the future, not as much the past. Brian, I appreciate the time for sure. I'll let you get back to your off season and the rest of your weekend. And any final comments you have about the Steeler team or anything to the fans? We already threw something out there about the Christmas Day game.
I know. I'm just excited, man. I'm excited, man. Every year around this time, especially after the schedule is released, is where you really start to get pumped about what's going to happen. You know, football is right around the corner. College football is right around the corner. I'm excited, man. This is going to be a fun summer because, you know, July 15th, the 16th, you got the new college football game coming out. I can't wait for that. That's going to get me geared up to, you know, ready for training camp, travels and stuff like that. So it's going to be a great summer.
Yeah, to say the least. I don't want to rush the summer, but yeah, it does feel like football season is absolutely rapidly coming, whether it be the NFL and college football. I know you're involved in coverage of both of those, and so am I. And I definitely appreciate the time for sure. I would be remiss as a journalist if I didn't just quickly ask you this. You were teasing something on social media about a week and a half ago about maybe a move the Steelers is going to make. Anything on that you could give us or anything that you know in terms of your friends or birdies?
No, I'm staying away from that. I'm not doing none of that. Long story short, I've addressed that before, and people was attacking me like I all of a sudden just want to make up a story for clicks. I'm not that type of dude.
Oh, I believe you were making things up for clicks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, how dare you make up a story? What are you talking about? Like, I played for the organization that you're a fan of.
Right, I'm sure you know things. Right.
I played for the organization, and what happened was there was some information that was expressed to me. Granted, clearly that fell through the cracks, but at the time it seemed like it was going to be a real thing. And of course, as you guys have heard throughout then, that there have been discussions made.
100%.
Right. Yeah. Discussions have been had. And with those discussions, some things could have been right there on the cusp of actually happening. And then in the 25th hour, no, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing that bothered me the most was fans was like, how dare you just make up a story for clicks? What? I played for the organization you love. What are you talking about? I have a relationship with them still to this day. What are we talking about? What? Why would I just make up a story just to make up a story? Does that make any sense? That don't make any sense.
Not only that, but like your podcast, you as a former player, CBS, obviously a major company. You're a former Steeler, a major franchise. You don't need to do that for clicks. You're going to.
No. And I've never been. Most people don't know me personally, but I've never been an attention seeker.
No, not at all.
You know, anytime when I play in Pittsburgh, I always handle things with an even keel mind when it comes to media and talking to people and being very, very forthcoming and personable and respectful. So that's the thing. And you know what? Even if I do know something for sure that's going to happen, I'm not saying nothing. No, that ain't. I'm staying away from that. I'm not doing none of that. I've noticed our fan base are very, very passionate, just like Florida State fans are. They're super passionate, and I appreciate that, no question. But you have to understand something. I'm not an analyst that never played for your organization that you love.
Yeah,
like I was a part of teams that won championships. Yeah. I'm forever engraved in the love for the organization. We won Super Bowls together. Like,
yeah.
You guys cheered for Super Bowls that we were a part of. What are we talking about? Like, make up a story just to make up a story. Like, come on, man. I put on the helmet and ran into people, and people ran into me. Broke bones.
Yeah. I'm sure you're not going to risk your relationship with the Steelers to be making things up. I'm sure you wouldn't do that. And I will tell you, too, as somebody who didn't play but has worked in journalism for a long time as a reporter, columnist, talk show host, etc. There are a lot of times, as you articulated when I first asked you that, where we could be told something, media members, by a legitimate source, whether with the organization, outside the organization, but we 100% trust this source. This is not some random thing out there, and we feel comfortable reporting off this source. The source maybe even tells us, Mike, I'm giving you the story. Go ahead and report it. And then, as you said, in the 25th hour, something collapses. It doesn't go down. It's not the source trying to screw me over. They love probably for it to occur, but it just didn't happen. It doesn't mean that I'm lying, making something up. It doesn't mean the franchise or whoever is not trying. It doesn't mean that they're giving me false info. It's that something went down in the 25th hour, and it could even be as little, and I'm not saying this was the case, it could be as little as a trade's agreed to by teams, and then someone fails a physical that maybe the fans don't find out about. That would then kibosh it right away, too. You don't know what could stop things. And it doesn't. They might not even always put it out there. So that doesn't mean someone's lying.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, that's the thing. I can accept, you know, being called a lot of things, but just saying I just made up a story.
Sure.
Like, what are you talking about? Man? No, man, stop. Please stop. Yeah. But no, there's nothing to take, you know, personal or serious with me, man. Life is great. I appreciate our fans. We got some of the more passionate fans in the world, and I love it. I love them for that. And utilize that same passion for this season, week one in Atlanta, in the Mercedes-Benz Dome, because our players will need it. Yeah. We're going to need that energy, that same mindset, man. Let's go. It's go time.
Yeah, you got a lot of intrigue. Week one,
no question.
Arthur Smith revenge game. Week two, Russell Wilson revenge game.
Let's go.
You go into some big game Christmas Day, and then those divisional games, 100%. Yeah, most passionate fan base in the world, but some of them go off the rails sometime, but that does happen on every fan base. Brian, I appreciate the time, man, so I hope we'll be talking to you again soon.
Take care.
Brian McFadden, former Steeler. Great. Two-time Super Bowl champion, CBS Sports NFL analyst, and of course, co-host of All Things Covered with his cousin, Patrick Peterson. And he also does cover Florida State. I could talk to him about college ball all day as well, as those schedules are coming out. And I, of course, covered college football, both nationally and West Virginia directly. And he, of course, is involved, former Florida State Seminole, and involved in that coverage a lot more last season than before. And obviously last season could be a whole conversation, a whole show on what happened to Florida State and how they reboot now. Didn't get into all that, wanted to let him go, but a lot more we could discuss with Brian McFadden. We'll definitely have him back on. We've had him on before. I've had him on multiple iterations of this show, actually. And he's a great guy. And I had to ask him that. I had to ask him just because that would be my job. And people would say, Mike, you didn't ask him. I know he addressed it a little bit, but not as much as he just did there. He's not going to make something up. It doesn't make sense. I mean, I don't make things up at all, but if you want to call a journalist somebody who makes something up, if you want to say myself or a colleague like Alan Saunders or somebody like that makes something up, by the way, we don't. I don't. Alan doesn't. But okay, maybe you don't understand what I articulated, that we hear things from a legit source. We're told we sometimes go ahead and report it. I've flat been told by somebody multiple times, Mike, I want you to be the guy that break this. Go ahead and do it now. And then it didn't end up happening, even though I reported it. That's through my career. I'm not going to tell you where or who told me that. But that doesn't mean that I was lying or making things up. Alan wouldn't do that either. I don't know any colleagues, actually, whether it be in Pittsburgh, West Virginia, or anywhere nationally, would make something up just out of nowhere. There are people that do it. They're not colleagues of mine, but there absolutely are people that do it, and that's the issue. There are people that do it all over where they make things up and they do one clicks. That does occur. I get it. But my point was, if you want to call somebody, even if they're a legit journalist that you're not familiar with, you don't know me, and you see me say something, you don't like it. People sometimes attack what they don't like, even if it's not something that's being made up. It could be true. You just attack it because you don't like it. That's a problem in our world, both sport, news, politics, etc. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not true. But you may see something that I report and say, I don't know Mike, he's making it up. First of all, I don't make things up. Even if you don't know me, you should get to know me. I won't make things up. I don't do it. Don't need those clicks. Don't want those clicks that way. I'm actually a journalist, even though maybe multimedia is part of it and a personality too. I don't roll that way. I'm never going to roll that way. But okay, if you don't know me and you don't know that, you could say, okay, he's making something up. Brian McFadden, a former player, he's not going to ruin his relationship with the team. You all do know him. That's not a question. Obviously, every fan should be aware of him. If you don't know who he is and you're a Steeler fan, that's your own problem, and that's your problem right there. But he's not going to risk a text from Tomlin saying, hey, why'd you make that up? I told you something else. He's not going to risk anything with his relationship with the franchise. He also works for, obviously, a premier company in CBS Sports. They don't need to have random clicks that are just made up. They don't do that. That's the legit company. His pod draws fans and listeners because he is a former Steeler. It just, former player. It doesn't make sense. So anyone saying that about what he said, he was teasing something. Maybe he, you know, maybe you didn't like what he was teasing. Maybe you're confused by the tease. I had to ask him. I don't think he'll make something up. He didn't make something up. Things didn't come to fruition because I kind of know where he was going off some off-the-air conversations, but things didn't come to fruition. We'll see where we go, by the way, because they still could bring in a vet receiver. They still could be doing things in win-now mode, even though they also are building for the future. But they heard, just like Brian heard, just like I heard, just like you heard, Art Rooney II said, we got to win a playoff game. That's different. That wasn't said the year before. So it's an interesting offseason. A lot more will happen, a lot more to watch out for until training camp hits. And by that point, if I had to predict, Cam Hayward will be there. He'll have a new contract. I will add, Brian doesn't want to probably say this, for my hot take as we close the show, I do not think the Steelers should offer Cam Hayward a big long-term deal. I'd be worried about even a 2 or 3 year deal. I love Cam Hayward. He's a staple of the franchise. I do think he's a borderline Hall of Fame guy. He's certainly a Steeler all-time great regardless. He is a really nice guy, by the way. I've interviewed him. I've been around him. He is a great guy. He is deserving of the Walter Payton Man of the Year. Also a great player for many, many years. And as I said, he missed the games last year, only played in 11, but he played in 17 the year before, 17 before that, I believe 16, 15 before that. He usually plays in most of the games throughout a season. And usually when he plays, it's a high-level football. They can find ways to get him involved and use him and have him be a force, even if not what he was when he was 25, as he gets older. Okay, but you do want to pay for the future, not the past. You can give him maybe a 1 year. Okay, we appreciate the past. You can still get it done now. I would try to dip the guaranteed money. I would try to dip the remaining years. I would try to dip the contract towards the end. I try to make this team friendly, and I would sell to Cam as much as I get it's a job, and I get he wants the most he can. I get he wants to sell up his family for generational wealth, not knowing of anybody else in his family, even though, of course, his brother and father had the pro careers, that he wants to make sure no one even has to worry about building, you know, working. He wants generational wealth. He kind of has it, but he wants more of it. I get it. This is a job for him, for pro players. and they're getting what they get because they generate so much revenue out there in the world. You're so interested, you buy so much. With all of that said, again, you're paying for the future, not the past. If I can't have him agree to a team-friendly type of deal because I do want him, I know he wants to be back and be part of this, I would give him one last pitch, and I would say, Cam, you've done everything under the sun. You've been there a while. You played with BMAC. You know, you got there, and they lost a Super Bowl, and you have not been on a Super Bowl championship-type team. You're a Bortola Hall of Fame guy now. It shouldn't be about this because individually you're still great. It doesn't make you better individually, but perception is reality, and this is sometimes how it works. You get a ring. You're a part of a special ride, even if it's not you being as great as you were 5-6 years ago. That'll boost your stock. That may get you into Canton. That may make you a Hall of Famer. That certainly will help your Steelers legacy. Look at Jerome Bettis, running back, great running back, stacked the yards, one of the best in the game in the 90s. Hadn't won a ring. Got close, hadn't won a ring. Got to the Steelers after they lost the Super Bowl. Hadn't even been in that big game. Hines Ward cries. They thought they missed it for him. He then comes back. They win it. He wasn't even close to elite. He was the secondary back. He got the touchdowns, but he did not churn the yards. Willie Parker churned those yards, including with the big run in the Super Bowl. But Jerome Bettis got the ring, still wears the ring. He still introduces as a Super Bowl champion. He would have been a Hall of Famer anyway when you look at the numbers. But his Steelers legacy, his NFL legacy, all it increases. It increased because he was a part of that championship team. Fair or not. And I'm a guy that teams win rings, not individuals. It's probably not fair. He didn't do what he did 10 years earlier. It wasn't like he was a better player because of that ring. But it changed the perception. It changed the reality. It changed his legacy. He's a part of reunions. He's a part of DVDs, all that stuff now. Celebrated more now with the ring because of that season and what that meant for the franchise. That was the first in a while for the Steelers. Without it, would it be the same? Would he be loved the same? Would he be cherished the same? Would he be back as much? Would he be part of media here and nationally? Probably. Would it be the same, though? Would the perception be the same? Would he be part of reunions? What would they be reuniting for? So, no. He would be a Hall of Famer and be in media, but it wouldn't be the same. And Cam Hayward could be sold in that too. But maybe Cam would throw back and say, you guys aren't ready. I don't think they're going to win a championship next year. Maybe year after that, quarterback situation will be maybe in flux again. Maybe they're not ready. Maybe if I'm Cam and I put this out to him a year ago, maybe I would say, this is what I want from you. I'm already a Steeler all time great. If this isn't going to happen, I'm going to go jump on a ring elsewhere and get it to a team that is team ready now. Now that I could ride to win a championship. And even if I win one ring elsewhere, Steelers fans are still going to love me. I do believe they would. So that might be what he would throw back at them, but you got to make it friendly a little bit to help this team. If you try to load up and do kind of a, you know, some type of ceremonial big deal contract thing because of what you did in the past, it's not going to help this team. You're not better in the long run. You're not going to be better in the future than what you were. They got to pay for the future, not the past. I do want to give another shout out and thanks to Brian McFadden, my guest here on this episode of Mic Drop, again, made possible by the Believe Network and available everywhere you get your podcasts. So you can find BMAC with CBS Sports on the All Things Covered podcast. You can find Mic Drop here with Believe and everywhere you get your podcast. And you can find me at MikeAussie11 on social media. And you go there and you can find everywhere else I am throughout my career.